Hi, everybody. Before we jump into this week's conversation, I'm going to pat myself on the back a little bit and tell you all that this is my 300th episode. You know, I don't know how many of you were sold the story when you were kids that, you know, you wouldn't amount to a hill of beans, but I certainly was. And so I've always had this story that I'm a quitter, that I'm someone who gives up. And so the fact that we've reached 300 episodes, well, I'm gonna shake my hand, make a little toast, and give myself a pat on the back for being someone who, in fact, does not give up. You know, part of it is I love doing this show, and part of it is I just love the humans I'm meeting and the new friends that I'm making while making this podcast. And that includes Robin this week and this time. I was really trying to find someone that would put the cherry on the top of this fabulous podcast. And when I was talking to Robin, I thought with her grace, her generosity of spirit, and her very kind heart, she was the perfect guest for number 300. So really quickly, let me tell you that Robin is a certified hypnotherapist, ordained interfaith minister, technologist, project manager, storyteller, and a human. And as she says, she's damn proud of it. She's an advocate for human potential. She's a dreamer. She's someone that lives on the edge of magic and mystery. And all in all, she's another reminder that this world is filled with good people who are trying to make this world a better place. So here we go. Welcome to episode 300 and my conversation with Robin Harris.
I was 18 and I was still in this I'm not lovable stage. And I had prepared my first Thanksgiving dinner for this guy. And he didn't show up. And I was devastated.
How do you self-describe if you had to introduce yourself to a group of people and you're on a stage? How would you do that?
On a stage, the thing that I have been declaring for myself, and I really feel this, I am an advocate for human potential. That is so important to me because I come out of the technology industry 25 plus years. I'm a techie. I love it. I love technology, but I love human beings more. And so I really want people to understand I'm not trying to dismiss technology. I come from the compliance and the security end of it, but it needs to be used ethically and safely and with humanity in mind. And then we humans, we need to take responsibility for the awesomeness we were given. We have so much potential. I you say, how would I introduce myself? I'm going off on the rant because this is my soapbox. Me and my husband talk about this all the time. It's like humans have so much potential. And we are being lulled into a deeper trance. I'm a hypnotherapist. And one of the things we have to do is dehypnotize people because people don't realize we're walking around in a trance that's feeding us a false narrative of who we are and what we're capable of and where the power lies. And we're being conditioned from the time we show up on the planet to believe the power is out there. And I have to always remind myself. Stop looking at the caboose. The engine is in the unmanifested world of spirit. You're looking at the caboose.
Oh my gosh. Can I ask you, this is just the most fascinating answer I have to tell you, but was this something you've been aware of your whole life? Like the cultural conditioning, how we've all been kind of fed these stories that kind of make life more convenient for those in power. Is this something you've known your whole life, or has this revelation kind of occurred over time?
I was raised a preacher's kid. My father was a Christian preacher. My father, if I were to say what the definition of a Christian that walked their talk was, it would be my father. And at the same time, he was a human. He was a human. So he lived in a world of conditioning. And early, I started like around 8. I'm like, something doesn't feel right. I got upset when they start talking about sacrificing animals. It's like, well, why would God need to do that? You know, I got upset when I was like, okay, we're supposed to be children of this God. Why are we suffering? Why are we struggling? Why don't we have the prosperity if we are children of this? If my father is the king, and he's a kind father, and I know a kind father. My earth father was a kind father. There is no way my earth father would have let me suffer and live a life of lack and pain and suffering. So if I know that of my earth father, and I know everybody doesn't have that experience of a father, I know that. But if it resonates to think of God as a father, God as a mother, God as an it, whatever, it just did not resonate, and it did not feel right that we weren't living a more prosperous and peaceful life. And I will say that as I went through my church experience, I became more and more wounded. I think I was probably 21 years old before I stopped being afraid of storms. My brother tells me I used to walk around crying behind him because I was afraid he was going to hell. It's like, would you get out of here, kid? Because I'm the youngest of 9, so they were much, much older. Everybody would go to sleep when the storm would come, and I'd be like, how y'all going to sleep? I'm waiting for trumpets and, I was so afraid of storms. I was grown before a storm became a peaceful and a welcomed experience for me, because I quickly learned to fear God. And that's a slippery slope, because when you fear, you cannot fear and love. That is a unwell dynamic. That's the dynamic of an abused child. I love you because I need you, but I'm afraid of you. That's not a natural relationship between a loving parent and a child. I loved my daddy. I was never afraid of my father. And I got whoopings. I came up in that era. I'm not going to say, but I never was confused about who loved me. Daddy loved me. And my mother, she was like the strong, person who served through love. So I started feeling very wounded. And as a female, there's a whole narrative around women. I just grew up feeling so wounded. And at some point I decided I wasn't lovable. And it's not because of my family experience, but it was because of the how I interpreted some of the church teachings. I was born in a traumatic situation where my mother almost died. So I had birth trauma. And my mother noticed it. She's like, ooh, she said, you were afraid of everybody except me and your father. And it took me a while to warm up to those other eight people in the houses because they're also looking at me like, you almost killed our mama. So it took something. And I think I came in to heal that, not to blame anybody, but to heal that. So I was put in a situation where all the things that would kick up the mud, stir up the mud, were present in my environment. Nothing anyone would say was truly traumatic, but it was traumatic to me because at some point I decided I was not lovable, not even by God. And I did so much work on myself. I did some very stupid things to try to heal myself, like the, you know, going to people who you're going to cast spell and they're like, okay, bring me an egg. And I'm like, oh, this don't sound right. I'm going to leave that alone. So I did so much work on myself. And my mother died unexpectedly. And that threw me into despair because my mother was my friend. My mother got me. My mother understood I was different and it was okay for me to be different. My mother, preacher's wife, she had the Bible on the nightstand and the Bhagavad Gita. You see what I'm saying? And the daily word. And I don't know, somehow in the library, there was Bridie Murphy, the story of the reincarnate. So my father took me deep into the love of God. And my mother expanded my world, that God is more than we just know it to be. But I wasn't able to reconcile all that. So I still just had more questions than answers. I'm sorry, I'm crying.
Don't apologize. I'm actually thinking of you and I just am thinking your whole life, almost, it seems to me, you have been a prophet. Does it feel that way?
Here's the thing, and I will agree. I even did the cards, and it's like your voice, your energy, your essence. That's what you need to bring forward. And I actually, I was afraid to because I was raised, women were silent. So being seen was a problem. And it was through my last job, somehow they saw me on video and they're like, oh my God, we want you on our weekly YouTube show. And that's what actually gave me the courage to understand, oh, you have a voice that, whether you're talking about security and compliance, and that's a whole nother thing. I can go on and on and on, and AI and all this other kind of stuff. I can go on and on and make it, break it down so that normal people get it. And I credit my job for opening that door up for me to the point where I was invited to a conference to speak on AI and security and everything like that. But that job, I've had a couple of jobs that were part of my healing and revealing process. I've had a couple of jobs like that, just magical. And the way I got them was magical. And I went to, I finished my first year of hypnotherapy school, and I started to understand why it's not going to work just saying affirmations to break those cycles. Why it's not going to work just creating a vision board and visualizing. Why it doesn't work is because we don't understand this beautiful mind. So powerful. And it's so programmable.
I have to say, I mean, like I said, I don't know, I'm sure you're going to understand this, but when I looked at your profile, I just got this really positive vibe. I just felt this resonance. It was as if I knew you were going to be a kindred spirit. And so I've been really looking forward to this interview with you since you booked it. Listening to you, hearing how you speak, but also how you've integrated your various life experiences, but also how you've integrated them so you can bring fruit and blessings for other people. I looked at you while you were talking and I was like, oh, she's a prophet. And her life has been one long prophecy so that others can see how it's possible to heal, how it's possible to live, how it's possible to, you know, walk in the world with kindness and grace and be a blessing for other people. But I've no doubt, you know, I think a lot of people, so you have to know that when I went to seminary and got my Master's of Divinity, I went to a Methodist seminary. And of course, you know, there were a lot of classes on the Bible and we talked about prophets, and the prophets were practically all men in the Bible. They're just all men. There was no room for any women, or there were actually no stories of women being prophetic. But I think, you know, you can be prophetic in that, for example, a brother of a friend that I had, you know, the family was really struggling for money and they really were desperate. And he was in a Target or a Walmart, I can't remember. And a stranger just came up to him and said, by the way, all of your money issues are going to be solved by the end of this week. Wow. And he thought, you know, what? What? And he's like, Mom, listen to what happened. And, you know, they were like, this is strange. I don't know what that means. And then they got home later that day and in the envelope, in the mailbox was an envelope with a check for a lot of money that the husband was owed. So that's one way of being a prophet, right? You can walk up to strangers and maybe give them the information that they need. But I also believe in another kind of prophecy, which is your life, every moment that has shaped you, that has honed you, the signs you've gotten along the ways, you know, the weird, somewhat circumspect routes you've had to take to get someplace, but that taught you along the way. Each moment is a prophecy because it can be a teaching for other people. Does that make any sense?
Thank you.
Yeah, that's what I see in you. And so I'm not surprised that these people are like, you would be perfect for our YouTube channel because you have this effortless grace about you. And also I think, you know, voice is scary. Using your voice is scary because you're putting yourself out there, right? And as we were talking earlier, before we kind of officially started recording, you know, the media makes money by perpetuating this idea that, you know, the haters are legion and that they're going to come for you. So you better toe the line and not rock the boat. When in reality, the truth is that the people who are kind, who are loving, who will help their neighbor, who will step up in the time of need, they far outweigh.
Yes.
I mean, I think we need to all remember that.
Yes.
You know? So I was listening to you and I was thinking, preach, preach. I was so excited.
Thank you. I receive that and I receive it as a blessing and a confirmation.
Yeah.
And that's one of the cards I was said also got about getting external validation that I'm on the right track.
Well, let me ask you, do you do tarot cards or are they kind of oracle cards?
I do the Light Seers tarot, which I love. Oh my God. Sometimes I'm like, okay, I don't want to hear what you have to say today. So I'm going to go over here to my other deck. But she has another deck just for business. And so I told a person about the Light Seers deck and she got it. And then she did some research and she told me about, oh, did you know she's got this other deck for business? And so you do these cards, these spreads for your business. And I was looking at abundance and money and mission and what's blocking me and what's the path forward. And I've been meditating on those things, the cards, because I was like, oh my God, everything's telling me. Matter of fact, it tells me that my central point of moving my business forward is through collaborations of souls.
I want to ask you, okay, so when you were a kid, what did you dream about becoming?
At one point, I used to pretend I was a teacher. I used to pretend. And at one point, I used to write for our church newsletter. And I would take like a song like Flashlight Parliament Funk. And instead of flashlight being all these different lights were about everybody's got a little light under the sun. So I would reframe those into a spiritual context. And I used to do little skits with my nieces and all this other kind of stuff. And I managed to get myself in the music business for a little while, which was a dream come true nightmare.
Wait, singing?
Singing and writing.
Wow. Was it fun at all?
It was fun, but the morality of that environment was very weak. And, you know, I'm about, you know, went out with some friends and hanging out, and there's the mirror with the white powder and the rolled up, and I'm like, okay, this probably wasn't a party I needed to be at. you know, it just, that business is very hard, and when it wasn't very welcoming for a person that didn't live that way.
Yeah.
And so that made me feel very lonely. And I was married to somebody who did live that way. So that was a problem. That was husband number one. That was a prep course. Preparing me for the husband ever after, number two. Adorable. But anyway, that's a whole nother story. But so I wanted to be in the music business. I got myself in the music business. I wanted to teach, I was very creative. Creativity is one of my big things. Writer. So I'm writing. My dad actually told me, I know you want to sing, but you're a writer. And so I actually discovered from my sister that I love computers. I love programming. So I have this very analytical side because she was a programmer. She mathematician turned programmer. And I discovered at a young age. So my first job was in computer science. I was like 17. The teacher had recommended me for the job. And I ended up getting a scholarship. And I love technology. That's what I say. I love technology, but there's no competition between humans and technology. Humans win all the time. But technology is awesome, especially now because it makes things like what we're doing right now possible.
Yeah.
I tried doing this stuff like back in the 90s when we were on dial-up. Oh, it was so painful. It was so painful. I remember that AOL, the CD you used to get, and you come in and, you know, you had like 10 hours for the whole month.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I always think of the movie War Games with Matthew Broderick and mm-hmm. how he had to use a phone and a modem to yes. make anything happen.
Yes.
How far we've come.
Oh,
seriously.
Yes.
I kind of miss those old rotary dial phones sometimes. Yes. They're so funny.
And you hear the dial kick and it dialing and connecting. And it's so funny. Yeah.
Well, I have to say, I think it's so cool. Well, what I find remarkable also about you is that you seem, you know, people are like, you're either left-brained or right-brained, you know, analytical or creative, but it sounds like you have a really beautiful balance between the two.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, You know, and then you tell me your sister did mathematics. And I've always thought of math as very interesting because, you know, there's that age old question, is mathematics invented or discovered? And I've always erred on the side of it's discovered mm-hmm. because the math is eternally out there in the universe. It's just up for us to decode yes. what the universe is saying. But, you know, that doesn't mean I am bad at math. So I always am so envious and excited when I meet someone who's either good at programming, technology, or math, because mm-hmm. those things are so far outside of my capacities. And I'm like, I'm so excited. Do tell me more.
Well, one of the things is some people are left brain dominant. Some people are right brain dominant, but the world focuses on left brain dominance. And that's a problem. That's a problem. Because that's where we get all of these, my mentor, she calls it mind dominant culture. She said the mind dominant people are running the planet. And most mind dominant don't have that. They haven't quite tapped into that spiritual side. And it turns out that some of them don't have a gene for it. I'm like, what?
It's true.
I'm like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you an interesting story. So my stepmother, a couple years ago, you know, I've always had really deep intuition. I've always really consciously tried to live, you know, by noticing the synchronicities and the patterns in my life, the messages that I get. And a few years ago, my stepmother said, hey, I know this shaman, this medium who does work with people. I'm happy to pay for a session. And I said, okay, sure. Like, why not? Why not? Great. And so I had a meeting with her and she said, okay, tonight I'm going to journey and I'll do a bunch of work and then we'll talk about it in the next couple of days, like 4 or 5 days. And I was like, okay. So I went to sleep. I woke up the next day. I am not kidding. In the middle of the night, I suddenly stopped being able to sleep. I was in the middle of writing a bunch of creative stuff. It was all gone. Every single creative impulse I had was gone. It was like a drought. It was like a desert. And then I felt completely severed from the world. I was just cut off. And so when I met with her, I mean, I also stopped dreaming. And I was a big dreamer, stopped dreaming. So I met with her a few days later and she said, oh yeah, you know, you were just way too open to everything. You're way too open. So I just shut it all down. I just closed everything. And I said, oh my gosh, that actually makes sense because I'm no longer sleeping. I can't sleep anymore. I'm not dreaming. I'm not creative. I literally can't write anything. And I feel so bereft and cut off from the world and the universe. I feel sick to my stomach. And she said, oh, well, you're just too open. You needed to be closed anyway. And I thought, okay. You should have asked permission first before you just cut everything off. But I don't know how I'm going to live like this because I said to someone, it felt like she took me by my roots and yanked me out of the soil. And it took 4 months. Because she said, I'm not going to reverse it. She's like, maybe I'll go back and open you a tiny bit so you can sleep, but I'm not reversing it. And I was like, okay, I don't know what just happened here. I don't know who this person is. So it took me about 4 months. I mean, I remember the night I had my first dream and I was like, oh my God, it's coming back. Like whatever my connection is to creation, to source, to creativity, it's coming back. And thank God, after about 5 months, I was able to sleep again. It took another year for me to cultivate, you know, feeling my way out into the world and having synchronicity happen, my intuition. So all that to say that, you know, when we do this big work with people, we should always be respectful. We should always ask permission. We should never assume that we know better. But not only that, I think there is something to be said because you seem to have a really deep connection to that creative source that's in the universe. you know, whether you want to call it God or spirit or energy or whatever my listeners want to call it, you seem to have a really deep connection with it and a collaboration, you know? And I think that that is what's especially enchanting about you, is that you don't see the dichotomy between left brain, right brain, analytical, creative. You can use both of them to create, you know, your beauty and your power in the world, and do it respectfully. So
I just want to say that is an abuse of power. What you experienced was unkind.
Yeah.
And that is a problem that happens when people have power, no matter where they're coming from, spiritual or left brain or whatever. We have to be very discerning about how we use our power and how we're impacting other people.
Absolutely. Yes, I agree. You know, when she and I did our wrap up call, which I think is the second or third call, you know, I'd had a couple of weeks to reflect on what had happened. You know, I was still severed from everything. You know, we were talking and she said, I said, you know, I have more peace with what happened between us. And she said, why and how? And I said, well, now I know that it's real. Like, now I know that my connection to whatever, that ineffable presence in the universe, I know it's real because I know it can be taken away. And so I'm actually really grateful that this happened. And I said, I'm sorry, you know, I'm sorry, but that's just the way my mind works. And she was so upset. And she's like, well, if that's the way your mind works, then fine. And then she said, and by the way, I listened to your podcast and you really need to stop saying the word so much. And then I was like, okay, I've really upset her and I don't know how or why. I mean, I've been truthful about my experience, but I also realized that, you know, whatever's going on with her is not my responsibility. You know, I'm just, this whole experience was just so bizarre and so unfortunate. But in the end, the gift is, because I always try to find the gift is now I know that it's real. And what a huge gift is that?
Yes. Yes. There's a book, one of my peers from school recommended for me called We Don't Die, about this medium. And he did years and years and years, and people tried to discredit him and all, but they couldn't. And it was so, and I told my husband is, you know, he's like, I know there's something there, but he's not so much into the woo-woo. So I recommended for him to finish the audio book before I did. I know. And we would talk about it, because what that gave us is a sense of this life is like a slice of life for the soul. It's just a tiny little bit. An important part, but it's just a tiny little bit. Then we go home. You want to go home more evolved than when you came here. That's the goal.
Yeah.
To come here, this is, I was asking God, I was like, this life must not be what I think it is, because sometimes it feels so challenging and complex. And I said, it must not be what I think it is. So tell me, you know, help me understand what this life is. This life is for that life, not the other way around. This life serves that life, forwards that, the bigger picture. These are like little curriculums. Yeah. This is seventh grade. Seventh grade for the soul.
My God, we're in junior high.
We're in junior high, some of us. are in junior high. Some of us are in obvious, very few are in high school and college. No, we have very few souls at that level. A lot of people are in kindergarten, preschool. Like, you must be a new soul. Okay. Okay, I get it. I get it.
That's amazing. I've never heard of it explained in that way, but it makes perfect sense.
So it made me feel a little better. It's like, oh, school. You know, I liked school. I did well in school. I had some little hiccups there, but overall, I liked school. And really, if you know, depending on what we came here, what our curriculum was, and I think that's a soul decision with the divine. I don't think there's anything random about it. We might not appreciate it as a human, but our soul is bigger than that. But we can leave with something we didn't come with, something good. A treasure, a piece of knowledge, a piece of understanding that serves the soul, even if it's to make the soul like, oh, I'm like now I'm more compassionate, now I'm more forgiving, now I'm more understanding, now I can relate a little better to the concept of God's unconditional love and the need for it, you know. Because some people, I have to acknowledge that some people are in a intensive this lifetime. It's intense for them. And I can't even pretend to understand what they're going through. But I know God is still here. I know that they can reach out. They don't have to even reach out because it's right here. And so that kind of gives me some comfort knowing that we don't have to look for God. We have to be willing to receive the awareness of it, though.
Yeah. Gosh, all I'm doing is sitting here thinking, prophet, 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 prophet. And then I'm like, stop, you have to ask another question. Stop, stop. But you really have a way with words. You know, I think partially because I can feel your integrity and your authenticity, you know, those things can sometimes be in short supply.
Yes.
Yeah, with people who have used their voice on different platforms. It's really an excavation of self to discover who you are authentically at your core, at your being, so that you can have integrity in the world and speak with integrity. And it's a lot of work and it's a lot of therapy and it might be a lot of crying. It might involve going out into the woods and screaming, whatever that looks like, different for different people. But it's clear to me that you have done the work and you have a generous, expansive way about you. I don't know if you've heard that before, but generosity of spirit is also in short supply, I feel like, in this world. Do you think that, you know, was it both of your parents or your wider community, your family, or is it just something that is innate and inborn inside you that has created this great, expansive, generous spirit?
Oh, Kirsten, you must begin your questions from spirit, honestly. Same spread. It talked about the past supports the present and the future. And I realized there's a certain amount of grieving. I'm the youngest of nine, and I realized each of my siblings poured into me at a certain point in their life weird things. Like I learned to love horror movies with my sister, Frida, you know. And, you know, my dad, we were Dukes of Hazzard, you know, and Knight Rider. And my brother used to take me to the Kung Fu movies, and he made pineapple upside down cakes. And, you know, and so each of my siblings, I got my first hangover with a sister. It's like, okay, I'm not doing that anymore. You know, so each sibling had a time with me, and then it's sort of like they passed a baton. And my oldest sister and I were very, very close, and she's over 80 now. So I was really like her little girl. But we're in different spaces. They're all retired. They got grandkids. You know, they're dealing with, things with, you know, family with dementia and, you know, the types of things, caring for aging parents, you know, for in-laws. And they're in a very different place in their life. I feel like I'm just coming out to do the work. I'm just getting started. And there's a grieving because those relationships were so precious to me, but they are over. Not to say the relationships as they were are over. Only two of my siblings are not here anymore. But we just, you know, they're talking about growing tomatoes and I'm talking about, you know, creating funnels. It's like, huh? What kind of funnel? A cake funnel? What? No. It's a digital thing, you know. So we're in very different spaces. And I realized there is a grieving process. So what? And my dad, you know, sitting at the dining room table, Bibles, concordances, and all this other kind of stuff. So deep into the Bible stories, got deep Christian roots. Love those stories. And my mom with all the books and, you know, talking with her and everything like that. So my family gave me a safe space. But as I started to venture out from family, I was taught the world was unsafe. And I could not reconcile my way with those two conflicting messages. Because my work needed me to go out into the world. But if the world isn't safe, that's a problem. So I would say I got exactly what I needed from my family. I was born with some things. And that was the fertile soil. Even the I call them church wounds, was the fertile soil that set me seeking.
I'm not going to lie, you had me at Knight Rider.
Yes, me and my dad, and my dad was legally blind, but he could see enough, and we would just watch those. You know, I remember the last thing he was able to see, I had a business, and I took my whole team and my dad, because my mom had died by then, to see The Matrix. And my dad enjoyed that movie so much. And some people miss the whole spiritual essence of it. It's just a movie to them. Oh, no. It's not just a movie. It's the truth. Except when you come out of the Matrix, you're not coming out into a destroyed world. You're coming out and seeing, oh, this was the world. Let me see the world through God's eyes, because It's not, you're not going to see a destroyed world. You're going to see the world that God said, oh, I just created something. Look, it, that's good.
Well, I have to say, you know, you and I grew up in the same eras. And quite honestly, every one of your siblings had great taste. Okay. those kung fu movies. Hello. Yes. Also love Dukes of Hazzard. Love. I love how each of your siblings kind of imparted their own gift to you, their own knowledge, their own sharing. That's so beautiful. You know, I was the oldest, so I didn't have any really older siblings to do that. And you could talk to my brother and sister, and I don't know what they'd say I shared with them, maybe just being totally annoying and an older sibling. But when I talk to my mother on the phone now, I'll say, remember when that happened? And sometimes she'll say, I don't remember that. And then I'll tell her the full story and she'll just start laughing and it'll make her happy because, you know, it's reminding her of other things. And then I'll say, I don't remember that. So it's important to share these stories and to let other people remember the good times or the funny times. You know, your stories of your siblings are really powerful. I'd love to ask you the main question of the podcast.
Okay.
I actually, you know, just listening to, I'm thinking you've already shared quite a few magical moments, miraculous moments, but I would so appreciate if you would share, you know, it could be one story, it could be two stories of something where you feel like you either witnessed a magical or miraculous moment, or you experience something magical, miraculous, or mysterious.
Okay. I'm going to share two.
Okay.
Thank you.
I
was 18 and I was still in this I'm not lovable stage. And I had prepared my first Thanksgiving dinner for this guy and he didn't show up. And I was devastated. And I was so broken at that particular point in my life, I was contemplating suicide. And something said, call Sibby. Now, first of all, I should have been concerned that I heard a voice, but I wasn't. Call Sibby. And it's like, I don't have Sibby's number. Now I'm arguing with it. Open the drawer. And I open the drawer and I get my old, you know, this old funky phone book. And I open to, and I find her number. And I'm like, I don't even know why I have her number because she was my sister's friend. But I see her number. Call Sibby. I went in my room. I called Sibby. I sat in a rocking chair and I talked to her. And she prayed for me. I never talked to that woman again. I never contemplated suicide again.
You are clairaudient. I'm sure you know that, right?
Yes. So, I was working at my dream job nightmare. I wanted this job so bad because it was so prestigious and it turned out to be a nightmare. And I got up in the middle of the night and I went into the other room to have a meltdown. And I like boo-hooing, snot coming out the nose, just having a breakdown. And something inside me came up and I heard it. I could feel it. Nothing's wrong. Everything's in divine order. You're just not cooperating with the divine. You're not even going to be at that job. She told me at the end of the year, but she was like, everything's in divine order. That was my guide. That was the first time I met her that I knew of, that I heard her voice and felt her energy. So she's scolded me and hugged me at the same time. She is so, You know, some people are like, oh, their guys are like, oh, dear. So dear, my beloved. Oh, no, not my Sophie. She's like, what is wrong with you? Go clean off your desk. And I find two checks I was about to throw away for $900. You know, so those moments, and even the way I met my husband. Miracle. So one of the things that's important for people to be willing to hear God or whoever he sends, you got to be willing to hear it, and you got to be willing to have it say something you don't want to, you know, that's not what I want. That's not what I want to hear. You got to be willing to hear whatever it has to say and act on it. That was in March. In April, my company offered a buyout and they did mass layoff. And I could have stayed or I could leave. Oh, no, I'm leaving. I was respectful. I went out to the car, got in my car, because I didn't want to disrespect the people who were, like, traumatized by this. I went out to my car and did a happy dance. Because they paid me to leave. They paid me to leave.
Always said that my spirit guides are like, look at that spicy one over there, that little tamale. Yeah. Like, sure does whine a lot, sure does stamp her feet a lot, sure does complain, cries, throws things. We'll just let her have her little tantrum, and then, you know, once that's blown over, she'll see the light and she'll do what she wants. But we've got to give her this time to throw a fit. Because this is just part of the process. And I know they're just rolling their eyes and they're like, look, this would be so much easier if you just,
Oh, my God. I cannot imagine what they talk about when they're not with us. Because, yeah, I think my spirit says somehow she got the tough ones. Yeah, I got the special cases. That's all right. But yeah, it's and those interactions change. I work with it's a couple of books that talked about this. Jose Silva talked about it. The person that wrote Think and Grow Rich talked about having a council. And so I have a council of guides, and they swap out every now and then. New ones come, some leave, or some don't come as often. But I have a council of guides. They have different functions. They don't all do the same thing. And one of my guides is transgender. So funny.
I love that.
To me. She initially expressed as an androgynous, seemed like it was a male, but she's like, no, I'm not going to do that. So it's a male, but has very female energy and presents itself not as a female, as a male who embodies female and love females things, female style, females jewelry.
Yeah.
But, and then I've got, one that just works with me on business and one that just works with me on the spiritual side. And then I still have my guide and my teacher guide. And it's very interesting because sometimes they'll come together. Like I mostly see them as a group, but one of them will step up and it's like, you and I talk, or we'll go to someplace within my sacred space, and I'll spend time when I need one of them in particular to help me with something. And I realized that I would be quite lonely and lost without them.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's beautiful. And I was just thinking, you're so funny. Your question, I'm sure around the water cooler, wherever they are, and all the guides are talking about their charges on this plane, I'm sure there's some pretty salty conversations around that water cooler.
They love us. They so love us. And they are so not going to live our lives for us. It's like, you get to do the work. I will advise you. I will help you find answers, but you get to do the work. And I do want to say that I think part of the problem that makes it hard for people is because we've been given a fairy tale version of transformation. And so we think that there's this magical thing that's going to happen and we don't have to go through pain. Pain. We do have to go through pain. Suffering is optional. We do have to go through some pain. I don't have children, but I got bunches of nieces, and I don't think any sister ever told me the labor was pleasant. But none of them regretted it. Didn't even think about it after it was over because they're holding that precious little one.
Yeah.
You just do the work. It's some work. Sometimes it's painful. Sometimes, you know, we got to shed some things that we are holding on to. We got to stop telling certain stories that we've grown used to. Yeah. And I think if people will make themselves willing to do the work, we can all move forward together.
For appearing on the show, for trusting me with her voice, and for bringing her glorious self to our conversation. There will be a link in the episode show notes to all sorts of goodies around Robin and the work she's doing in the world. As well, there is a little bit of an Easter egg after this outro, so we continue our conversation, we talk about the state of the world, and we talk about what sensitive and thoughtful hearts are doing during this time and how we navigate this storm that we seem to find ourselves in. She once again reminded me that this world is peopled and filled to the brim with incredible humans who are just trying to bring their particular brand of beauty to the world. So let's all remember that. You know, despite what the news says, look around you, and 9 out of 10 of those people are just trying to make this world better and bring beauty and kindness and grace to it. Thanks to all of you who have listened this entire time, who have heard all 300 episodes and met all 300 splendid human beings. And thank you for all of the notes and messages and love you've given me over the years, because quite honestly, a lot of that has just kept me going. This is a lot of work. It takes time every week. You just have no idea. But the fact that so many people love the show and want to meet more people who are creating beauty, that just keeps me going. So here I am, going to say once again, thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Robin. Embrace your humanity. Robin knows she's not perfect. I know I'm not perfect. But here we are muddling our way through a world that at times can be incredibly stressful and really, really violent to those with sensitive souls. And so Robin acknowledges that this is a tough world, that it's a hard world, but her spirit and her spirit guides have her back. She is resilient, She has a great sense of humor, and she's also modest. Her humility really shone through. And with all of these superpowers, humility, grace, her sense of humor, she's navigating a world where sometimes, you know, each and every one of us can feel a little lost. But she has faith, and she has her council of guides, and she just knows that they're going to be there for her when she needs them. So be like Robin and have faith in the universe. You know, I can't say it enough. At the end of this 300th episode, have faith in the universe, because it certainly has faith in you.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey holding space. I was like, okay, let me look at what we're talking about, because it's quite a bit to hold space for the good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, I'm working with the group, and she's like, okay, go up to the white light, go up to the, I do my fair share of the woo-woo, and then I have my practical side and everything like that. But I have to do a fair share of the woo-woo. So she's like, go up to the white light and wash things in the white light. I was like, I'm gonna wash the whole country in white light.
Seriously. God. My God. Just put the entire thing in the washing machine and see what comes out.
I know. God, let's add some extra detergent in there, some spirit detergent, some healing detergent, some compassion detergent, you know, just. I just so feel that we've got to come back to kindness.
Yeah.
We've got to come back to kindness. And I meet so many, Kirsten, I meet so many wonderful people. I mean, they're just so wonderful, you know, people, whether they're accomplished, whether they're just normal, everyday working people, whether it's the person in the, you know, the store, the cashier just friendly. I just meet so many wonderful people. And we're getting bombarded with a segment because they're noisy.
Yeah.
Oh, like
yeah.
Chihuahuas.
Yes. Yeah.
Like little noisy chihuahuas.
Yes.
And then the media amplifies that.